Environmental issues. A variety of man-made and naturally occurring environmental conditions may require sellers to disclose any material facts relating their property to potential buyers. Greenfields. The term greenfield refers to land that has never been commercially developed. Developers find greenfields attractive because there is generally no cause for concern regarding pollution and no existing structures to tear down or remodel, while greenfields offer clean, unpolluted land for residential and commercial development. Many believe that the land should remain untouched to protect the animal and plant life that call them home. Grayfields. A grayfield describes land containing abandoned structures that are available for redevelopment. As is often the case, a commercial tenant, for example, a major retailer, either goes out of business, shuttering its doors, or moves into a new location, leaving behind a shell of brick and mortar to sit empty until a developer comes along to find a new use for it. Brownfields, former commercial and industrial sites throughout the country, sit unused due to supposed or actual contamination of the land. Fear that the previous owner contaminated the earth has led to valuable land that could be utilized for economic growth and development in many communities, sitting abandoned and overgrown. Many investors and developers do not want to take on the financial liability of cleaning the property for future use. These sites are referred to as brownfields. Many programs exist for the development or redevelopment of greenfield, grayfield, and brownfield sites so that they may be utilized in a manner that is beneficial for the community. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ, offers brownfield site assessment services for real estate transactions to determine if a site is contaminated and provides funding through grants from the EPA to clean sites for development. Wetlands. Wetlands are defined as the transitional zones between uplands and deep water. These areas are dependent on the presence of water for the majority of the year, such as swamps, marshes, bogs, fens, lagoons, and quagmires, among others. The presence of wetlands is not always glaringly obvious to the uninitiated, as many wetlands can be dry for part of the year, only filling up during a heavy storm. However, these wetlands perform essential functions for flora, fauna, and humans alike. The Clean Water Act names the United States Army Corps of Engineers, USACE, as responsible for regulating U.S. wetlands mold due to the prevalence of mold and the growing number of cases of dangerous levels of mold exposure. Many states have begun to legislate mold standards. These standards provide guidelines for permissible levels of indoor mold and how to remediate mold if it is found in dangerous levels in a residence or building. Tighter construction standards in newer homes can precipitate mold growth. Ventilation in wet areas, like bathrooms, and the use of proper construction materials are vital to discouraging mold growth. Hazardous substances and conditions. Radon is a naturally occurring, colorless, and odorless gas produced by the decay of radioactive materials in rocks under the ground. Radon enters homes through the foundations. HUD does not require radon testing for FHA loans. Mitigation is the term used to describe methods used to lower levels of radon in homes and other buildings. Asbestos is used to insulate pipes, in chimneys, and roofing materials, as well as flooring materials and siding. Problems arise in its removal because the dust can be extremely hazardous. The building does not have to be tented, but the area must be sealed off and the asbestos removed. It is better to encapsulate asbestos than to remove it. An asbestos abatement plan will outline the method to handle the control of asbestos found in a property. Urea formaldehyde foam insulation, UFFI, is pumped into walls as a foam. It hardens and insulates. Moisture softens the hardened material and causes the release of hazardous gas. Lead is found in paint and pipes and soil. Use the lead paint disclosure for all properties built before 1978, as older homes may have lead plumbing. The seller is responsible for providing the lead paint disclosure. The disclosure allows buyers to waive their right to a lead inspection lead is hazardous when eaten or when inhaled in dust particles. There is no duty to remediate lead. The seller must keep a record of the disclosure for at least 3 years from the sale date. Landfills or waste disposal sites that are improperly constructed can lead to groundwater contamination. Know the locations and disclose them. Recommend water testing. Underground storage fuel tanks, old, rusty, or leaking containers can cause groundwater contamination. Sometimes found on both commercial and residential properties, these are commonly called USTS, recommend water testing. Farming herbicides and pesticides are other sources of groundwater contamination. Recommend water testing. Electromagnetic fields, EMFs, caused by high-tension power lines are a controversial topic. Know their location and disclose it. Environmental site assessments. If a buyer or an investor, developer, has concerns about possible contamination of a potential property, he or she, or the lender, may opt to have an environmental site assessment, ESA, performed on the property to determine if it is environmentally challenged. An ESA is an assessment carried out by a qualified environmental professional to determine whether or not a property has been contaminated by any previous or current activities on or near the property. Even though an ESA can be a lengthy process, adding time to the transfer of property, it is beneficial for a buyer. This kind of due diligence can protect the buyer from purchasing a contaminated property that might be harmful to humans if developed. Many lenders will require an ESA on raw land to ensure that it is safe for development. There are three phases of an environmental site assessment. Each phase is more in-depth than the previous, looking for causes of soil or water contamination. Usual suspects of contamination include hazardous chemicals, metals, and petroleum products. Depending on the level, contamination can be a deal killer. No buyer will want to purchase contaminated property, and because of its limited uses and the expense of remediation, no lenders will want to finance it. Phases of environmental site assessments. Phase 1. A Phase Y ESA has three main components. 1. Site inspection. 2. Review of regulatory records. 3. Interviews with former or current owners and area locals who may have information about the history of the property. A Phase Y ESA does not assess for mold, asbestos, or radon. If it is determined that the property is contaminated, a Phase 2 ESA should be performed. Phase 2. During a Phase 2 ESA, samples of soil, surface water, and groundwater are collected from flagged areas and tested for contamination. The specific cause of the contamination of the soil, surface water, and/or groundwater will be determined. Remediation to clean the property of hazardous materials will be recommended. Phase 3. A. Phase 3. ESA is the remediation phase. Some of the techniques include soil excavation, soil washing, air stripping, pump and treat, chemical oxidation. Environmental protection, legislation, pollution caused by commercial and industrial businesses affects the health and welfare of the country's inhabitants. Significant federal legislation has been passed at the federal, state, and local levels to test, monitor, and regulate the substances that can be manufactured, processed, or released into the atmosphere and waters of this country in an effort to protect the air, land, and water from further damage. National Environmental Policy Act, established in 1969 by the President's Council on Environmental Quality, CEQ, the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, took effect in 1970 as the first of the federal regulations drafted to protect the national environment. The NEPA requires federal agencies to evaluate how their proposed actions will impact the country's ecological systems and natural resources. To this end, each agency must prepare an Environmental Impact Statement, EIS. This report includes a detailed description of the proposed project, including its purpose and need, any alternatives to the proposed project that could accomplish the purpose, and how the project will affect the environment. The Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, is tasked with reviewing each federal agency's EIS Clean Air and Clean Water Acts. The 1970s also saw the passage of the Clean Air Act, 1970, and the Clean Water Act, 1972. Both acts were established as federal efforts to combat the pollution of U.S. air and streams. Under the Clean Air Act, the EPA was authorized to create National Ambient Air Quality Standards, NAAQS, in an effort to protect the health and welfare of the nation's citizens. The EPA is tasked with regulating harmful emissions to reduce instances of air pollution. Since its inception in 1970, aggregate emissions of six common pollutants have dropped over 70%. The Clean Water Act strives in much the same fashion to reduce the release of harmful pollutants into U.S. waters. Originally enacted in the 1940s as the Federal Water Pollution Control Act, the law was reorganized and amended in 1972. The EPA is given the authority to implement pollution control programs and develop national water quality criteria to help keep America's waters beautiful and, for the most part, pollutant-free. Toxic Substances Control Act of 1976. Toxic substances present health risks for the people, animals, and plants of this planet. To track, test, and control certain toxic substances manufactured in or imported into this country, federal, state, and local legislation has been passed to protect the country and its citizens. Under the Toxic Substances Control Act of 1976, the EPA is given the authority by the federal government to require record-keeping, testing, reporting, and regulation of certain substances. The Act specifically addresses the production, importation, use, and disposal of industrial chemicals, such as polychlorinated biphenyls, PCBs, asbestos, and lead-based paint. To name a few, the Act empowers the EPA to ban the manufacture or importation of substances that pose a hazard to the environment and public health. The over 86,000 existing chemical substances in the TSCA Inventory 2 are known organic and inorganic substances manufactured in, processed in, or imported to the United States companies that wish to manufacture new commercial substances not currently on the TSCA inventory must notify the EPA of their intent by providing the EPA with a pre-manufacture notice, PMN, before beginning manufacture. The Comprehensive Environmental Response, Compensation, and Liability Act. The Comprehensive Environmental Response, Compensation, and Liability Act, CERCLA, was passed by Congress in 1980. CERCLA was designed to clean up sites contaminated with hazardous substances, pollutants, or contaminants. CERCLA gives the authority to recover natural resource damages caused by releases of hazardous substances. Authority for cleanup under the Act is granted to federal natural resource agencies, states' natural resource agencies, Native American tribes. The primary responsibility for cleanup is given to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA. The EPA may identify parties responsible for hazardous substances released to the environment and compel those parties to clean up the sites, or it may clean up itself and recover the costs from responsible parties. Responsible parties could include buyers, sellers, or any party who contributed to the pollution. Potentially responsible parties. A potentially responsible party, PRP, is a possible polluter who may be held liable under CERCLA for contaminating a property or resource. The potentially responsible parties include the current owner or operator of the site, the owner or operator of a site at the time that disposal of a hazardous substance, pollutant, or contaminant occurred, a person who arranged for the disposal of a hazardous substance, pollutant, or contaminant at a site, a person who transported a hazardous substance, pollutant, or contaminant to a site, who also has selected that site for the disposal of the hazardous substances, pollutants, or contaminants. Note that a lender who forecloses a property or who becomes involved in the day-to-day financial management of a business that is delinquent on a loan could become a responsible party. CERCLA Safe Harbor. Safe harbor rules stipulate the circumstances in which an individual or entity may be exempt from liability for the cleanup of a polluted site. Homeowners are generally exempt under the Act under the following conditions. They were unaware of the presence of pollutants when purchasing the property. They are not classified as a responsible party. They cooperate with the EPA or other agency in the cleanup of the property. Safe harbor rules applying to commercial transactions are considerably more complicated. Real estate professionals should be well-versed in the procedures for a purchaser to be granted safe harbor status in the purchase or lease of a property. Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. Texas is a state well known for its wide open spaces and natural beauty. In an effort to protect the state's natural resources, the legislature established natural resource programs geared toward protecting water, air, land, and regulating waste throughout the 20th century. In 2001, the Texas legislature changed the name of the Texas Natural Resource Conservation Commission to the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. Known as the TCEQ, the agency is the state's comprehensive environmental protection agency, responsible for the implementation of Texas's environmental programs. The agency's job is clear: clean air, clean water, and the safe management of waste. Some of the programs implemented by the TCEQ include the Dry Cleaner Remediation Program, Brownfield Site Assessments Program, Industrial and Hazardous Waste Corrective Action Program, Texas Innocent Owner Operator Program, Petroleum Storage Tank Remediation Program, Environmental Initiatives. Concerns about energy consumption and the environmental impacts of development have resulted in state, local, and federal legislation that discourages new development and, in some cases, even ban the further expansion of a community. This trend is embodied in much of the slow growth and no growth movements in cities and counties across the United States, where the preservation of a certain lifestyle is a high priority. While the idea of slow or no growth policies appeals to some, implementation is challenging, and the results are mixed. In many cases, development is directed from a no-growth jurisdiction to a neighboring jurisdiction that is more friendly to development. The result of this shift is that the area that was trying to protect itself from growth must ultimately deal with the resulting traffic congestion, pollution, demand for education, housing, and fire and police protection. An additional irony is that, while the no-growth policy shifted development to another jurisdiction, the community got many of the problems and none of the benefits in the form of property and sales tax revenue. These concerns, coupled with the desire to improve the quality of all types of real estate development, have led to private industry initiatives that are changing the way we build our homes, offices, schools, hospitals, and factories. Because of this, green building is the next big trend. Now that green building has become mainstream, the market for green products has exploded. Awareness of green building has turned into a global phenomenon. In its early stages, the concept of green building was a niche market made up of visionaries and members of the Back to the Land movement of the early 1970s. Green means different things to different people. The growth of the green building industry can be attributed to many factors, including the rising cost of energy, air quality issues associated with urban sprawl, an increasing awareness of current and future water shortages, an awareness of the importance of indoor air quality, the appeal of higher density development that contributes to cohesive, walkable neighborhoods. USGBC, the U.S. Green Building Council, USGBC, founded in 1993, is a private 501c3, membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes sustainability in building design, construction, and operation. The USGBC was instrumental in the founding of the World Green Building Council, WGBC, in 1999. The USGBC is a consensus-based organization of members from a wide range of vocations, including architects, engineers, developers, builders, REALTORS, and property managers, to name a few. Green building represents a significant economic and environmental opportunity. Greater building efficiency can meet 85% of future U.S. demand for energy, and a national commitment to green building has the potential to generate millions of American jobs. Green building standards. The U.S. Green Building Council's Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, LEED, is a voluntary rating and certificate system geared toward increasing the environmental and health performance of structures and neighborhoods. LEED encompasses new construction, existing buildings, and additions of commercial, industrial, mixed use, and all residential structures. Whether single-family or multifamily, LEED subject areas include sustainable sites, energy efficiency, water efficiency, materials and resource use, indoor environmental quality, emissions, and operations and maintenance. The LEED Green Building Certification System is the foremost program for the design, construction, operation, and maintenance of green buildings. More than 56,000 projects are currently participating in the commercial and institutional LEED rating systems, comprising over 10.5 billion square feet of construction space in all 50 states and 147 countries. Each day, more than 1.5 million square feet of space is certified using LEED. Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, LEED, is a third-party certification program for high-performance buildings developed by the U.S. Green Building Council, USGBC. Energy Star. While LEED focuses on many aspects of green building and management, the Energy Star program is focused primarily on energy efficiency. The Energy Star program was established in 1992 under the authority of the Clean Air Act as a voluntary program to identify and promote energy-efficient products and buildings in order to reduce energy consumption, improve energy security, and reduce pollution through voluntary labeling of or other forms of communication about products and buildings that meet the highest energy efficiency standards. Energy Star is a joint program of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the U.S. Department of Energy. The term Energy Star is applied to two programs, Energy Star Ratings for Appliances and the Energy Star Building Rating Program. Through the Energy Star program, consumers can identify and compare energy-efficient appliances. The program is operated by the U.S. Department of Energy, DOE. In order to earn the label, Energy Star products must be third-party certified based on testing in EPA-recognized laboratories. In addition to upfront testing, a percentage of all Energy Star products are subject to off-the-shelf verification testing each year. This testing aims to ensure that changes or variations in the manufacturing process do not undermine a product's qualification with Energy Star requirements. The U.S. Department of Energy administers Energy Star for buildings. For new homes, verification of a home's energy efficiency by a third-party organization is mandatory for earning the Energy Star label. There are two paths to certify a home to earn the Energy Star. The prescriptive path is based on a predefined package of improvements, while the performance path is based on a customized package of upgrades. The national program requirements define the core energy efficiency specifications for both the prescriptive and performance paths. Commercial buildings must be verified by a licensed professional, professional engineer, or registered architect to be eligible to apply for the Energy Star. The licensed professional must verify that all energy use is accounted for accurately, that the building characteristics have been properly reported, including the square footage of the building, that the building is fully functional according to industry standards, and that each of the indoor environment criteria has been met. For industrial plants, a professional engineer must certify that the information used to calculate the plant's energy performance score is correct. The plant must also satisfy EPA environmental compliance criteria. An Energy Star qualified home must be at least 15% more efficient than a standard baseline home. In fact, most Energy Star homes are about 30% more efficient than a standard baseline home. While most Energy Star homes are new construction, retrofitted existing structures can also qualify under the program, as can most commercial buildings. Water conservation and efficiency, rapidly increasing populations, coupled with the drought of 2011, have combined to make water conservation a top priority to many homeowners. Trends in water conservation can be seen both indoors and in outdoor landscaping. Low-flow faucets and showerheads have been standard features for many years. Increasingly common are dual flush toilets, which yield significant savings. More advanced conservation systems incorporate gray water recycling. Gray water recycling systems reuse water from laundry, sinks, and showers. The most basic systems use gray water for landscape irrigation. More advanced systems recycle the gray water for toilet flushing. Shower, bath, and laundry account for 55% of total water use in a typical home. Toilet flushing accounts for 30% of total water use. Gray water systems are best incorporated into homes during construction, if on a slab foundation. Houses built on pier and beam foundations can be retrofitted with a gray water recycling system with relative ease. Gray water can also be used for landscape irrigation. Several approaches to gray water recycling exist, from the simple direct application of runoff to landscape to more complex systems where gray water is routed through a filter and stored in a tank for future use. Texas law is specific regarding the methods of implementing these systems, so a knowledgeable installer or supplier should be consulted before implementing any gray water system. Texas law supports the use of gray water recycling, and many home builders include dual piping systems for gray water recycling in the homes they build. Rainwater harvesting is increasing in popularity. Rainwater harvesting can be as simple as placing a small container under a downspout to sophisticated systems storing thousands of gallons of water. The benefits of rainwater harvesting are many. Rainwater collected from rooftops is stored for later use in landscape irrigation, which reduces demand on potable water systems. Rainwater harvesting also mitigates floodwater runoff. Some municipalities are encouraging rainwater harvesting with rebates on the purchase of systems. The City of Austin has a rebate program that encourages rainwater harvesting. Rainwater harvesting and gray water recycling systems add LEED points for building certification and are therefore commonly installed in commercial buildings during construction or remodel. For more information on large and small-scale rainwater harvesting systems, see the Texas Manual on Rainwater Harvesting, published by the Texas Water Development Board.